Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
This upcoming concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. It's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, that's WCB style, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there's no in-store experience like it. If you can't make it into a store, just visit tecovas.com. That's T-E-C-O-V-A-S.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and ship right to your door. Go to tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today.
Guys, we're bringing on a guest today that is just a normal law enforcement dude that we had on the pod about a year ago. We did a hunt consult. And in that consultation, we basically just kind of gave him ideas on over-the-counter in Colorado. So we're going to check back in with Will. He's out of Wisconsin, and I want to hear his hunt report, what he did well, what he could have done better. And it's just a really relatable content because we all work hard to hunt elk on public land, and especially Colorado, where it's a little more crowded, and you're going to have to do things a little differently to separate yourself from the pack and to get into elk every day. So we're bringing Will on. He's a great dude. It's going to be a fun listen. Here we go. Welcome to the Elk Shape Podcast Season 6 with your host, Dan the Fitness Man. Thank you for tuning in. We are excited to have you. This is the podcast that is dedicated to hard work, disciplined decisions, and year-round training in the pursuit of the best possible version of ourselves. We leverage elk hunting to create a pathway. We understand that time is finite and we cannot squander a second. We must be leaders at our home. We understand that faith is our number one priority. Then family, then fitness, then health, then wealth. Our year-round disciplined decisions help us leave a legacy for our family to follow. You will leave here motivated, inspired, and educated. We bring on a wide variety of guests, subject matter experts, so that you can tune in, get what you need to get, and continue on your journey. We are blessed to call ourselves Elk Hunters, Season 6. Here we go. What were you saying? It's been a year to the day?
Yeah, it's almost been a year to the day, I would say. So, since we talked last, or since we did the last podcast, so...
Yep. Okay, so take the listeners through the first time you came on the podcast. What do we discuss? So if they want, they can jump back, listen to that one. I'll include a link in the show notes, but what do we chit-chat about?
Yeah, so I emailed you about a bunch of questions that I had as it related to elk hunting, specifically about hunting burn scars, my bow setup, my arrow weights, and just various questions as it related to that, and just kind of finding elk in general, good tactics to utilize and everything, so... I had to refresh my memory. So I listened to it last night again. I'm like, I can't remember.
Yeah. I was like, dang, he's got a better memory than me, but now I feel better. If you re-listen to it. Okay. That's cool.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. So, yep.
So what's changed for you in the last season between here and now? I mean, like
just work, life, family, anything major?
Nothing too crazy. I'm still working in law enforcement, and we just recently, in the last couple months, we hired a new officer, so I've been training him, and he'll be out on his own coming up pretty soon. So that's nice. We'll be fully staffed again. Otherwise, hunting season last year was a lot of fun, whether it was, between elk season, I shot a decent whitetail with a bow, and then another one with a rifle. Killed some ducks, been fly fishing recently. So I just had that same archery competition that I had last year that just finished up this last weekend. Now I'm just kind of getting ready for elk season again. So.
So how did you get tags in your pocket?
How did I get tags in my pocket?
Yeah, how'd you do it, man?
So I just did another... You're saying as it relates to this year, I'm sorry.
Yeah. What did you put in for? How did you get what state are you in?
I'm in Wisconsin. Yep.
Yeah. Which part of Wisconsin, by the way?
South Central, Princeton, Wisconsin.
Okay.
And so I just did last year, we did the over the counter in Colorado. This year I'm doing that again. So I did not put in for anything. I'm just, probably should have, but I didn't. I'm like, well, we did not kill an elk last year, but we got into elk every day, and we can get into that, obviously. So my thought process was, I'm just going to do another OTC and see what happens. So hopefully my buddy Leo is going to be able to go with me again. My brother is going to go along. He's not going to hunt, but he's just kind of going along as a buddy and a pack mule, hopefully. So, so we're going to go to the same unit. We hunted a completely different unit that we, were intending on doing, or hunting. So if you recall last year, you kind of opened up the podcast with that letter that police officer had written to you, Jeff. So he actually got hold of me after, he listened to the podcast. He reached out to me, I think on Instagram, and we got to talk, and he actually gave us some recommendations as to kind of where to go and what to look for. And so we did that. And obviously I'm not going to mention units and everything, but, so shout out to Jeff, seriously, Jeff, when you're listening to this, thank you very much, because I think, if it weren't for him, I don't think we would have, gotten on as many elk and bulls as we did. So hopefully I can repay that to him or pay it forward at some point, but we chat every once in a while, and I've offered, he likes hunting turkeys and stuff too. And, hopefully we've talked loosely about getting together at some point and, hunting turkeys or having him come out here to Wisconsin and killing an Eastern turkey or something like that. So, it's just kind of cool how that stuff works. So I can't thank him enough for reaching out and helping me along there. But that was pretty cool.
Any updates on Jeff? I know he was in the hospital, surgery, stubborn. This was a year ago, but I remember his email. He's a badass, man.
Yeah. Yeah. I haven't talked to him. Probably we shoot each other a text every once in a while. But he was definitely, it's been a long road to recovery the way he made it sound. But he's, staying motivated and ambitious. And I think, I don't know if he's back to work yet officially or not, but I think he's getting up to that point. So, but I'm going to reach out to him again, in the next couple of days and just see how he's doing and kind of let him know that I'm coming out to Colorado again. And he was kind of trying to, and again, it was just a situation last year, but I know that he was actually planning on trying to come out and join us for a couple of days. But that just wasn't in the cards. So, but maybe this year he'll be able to do that for a little bit. So that'd be cool. But
okay. So you're going back to Colorado. Have you actually bought your tag yet? Or do you just wait till you get there?
I'm going to probably buy it online. I think the sales go August 1st. I think you can buy your OTCs. If I read it correctly, maybe you can just do it now, but so I'm going to do it online regardless instead of just waiting. But last year we just bought it when we got out there. And From my understanding too, I think this might, I know Colorado is going to be changing things up, I think, in 2024 a little bit as far as availability for over the counter and things of that nature. And I don't know if that's going to relate to bow or rifle, but, so yeah, that's the plan. I'm going to just buy it online again. And plan is to go back to the same unit because we found elk. We were in elk every single day and we just couldn't quite connect. But I mean, my thought is like, it's a good starting point and I'll have plan B's and C's and Z's, but, you know, why move if you were in elk? I mean, I figure it's a good place to start again and I'm not going to leave elk to find elk, I guess, but they could be who knows where, obviously, but I have a feeling that there'll be some in that same area. So,
okay. You're going back to Colorado. You're going to do similar country. You learned it. Let's armchair quarterback. Let's like pick apart what you did well and what you did not do well. Cause I know your goal was to kill an elk and you didn't accomplish that per se. I want to do that. But before we get into the quarterbacking from the armchair, I want to hear a cop story. Give me a fun law enforcement story. Give me something that I can confirm. I would never want your job.
All right. So this happened, probably a month and a half ago, I would say, and I'll keep names out of it and everything and whatnot. But it was actually our new guy's second shift when I was training him. And we had just gotten off a domestic and we were sitting next to a county deputy, a couple of them. We were just kind of going over what had happened and everything. And they had been on a separate call. And so all of a sudden there was a black SUV that just ripped by us. And I was sitting perpendicular in a parking lot to a road. And he just blew by me. So I didn't get him on radar or anything, but I knew he was going way over the 25 mile an hour speed limit. So I pulled out, I lit him up, put my sirens on and everything. And he was not stopping. And ultimately he went around a corner. He went off into a field, corrected it, came back across the road, went into a ditch, corrected it again, went back into the ditch again. And then somehow he fit this thing through a mailbox and a tree. Didn't take out the mailbox, but he busted his sunroof on his SUV off of one of the limbs on the tree. So we got out and we conducted what's called a high risk stop. Basically like you have no, I mean, they're running from you, right? I mean, you have no idea what the heck is, what's going to be in that vehicle. Who's in the vehicle? Do they have weapons, anything like that? So a high risk stop is you're not approaching the vehicle. You're getting out. You're using ideally the pillars of your vehicle. You're stacking, the pillars, standing at the back of the vehicle, using those as cover, instead of your door, cause doors don't stop bullets. And so we had him at gunpoint, and I actually moved to a tree because the way he was positioned, our car wasn't in a great tactical, we didn't have a great tactical advantage, on my side from our vehicle. So I moved over to a tree and I ordered him out and he was quite intoxicated. But I had him hands out the window or slowly open the door, hands up, slowly exit the vehicle. I tried to get him to turn around, but he was so inebriated that he just decided to get down on all fours and start crawling towards me. So I'm like, well, I guess that works. And so we prone him out. We got him in cuffs. His girlfriend was pretty gone too. Fortunately, nobody was injured. And it was a guy that I had dealt with in the past and very, I mean, he's actually not, I say this lightly, but I mean, he's a pretty cooperative guy overall. I mean, as soon as I saw him stick his head out, I'm like, oh, okay, this is, you know, Bob, we'll call him, but I'm like, all right. So yeah, he got arrested that night. But fortunately nobody was injured except for the SUV. So
yeah, dude, you're freaking flyers. You gotta love them. You got good customers, good customer retention. Oh man. And what did the rookie think of all that?
He didn't really expect that to happen the second night. And rightfully so. I mean, you know, we're a small department, so our call volume is not anything compared to a larger city. Obviously we still deal with the same kinds of calls and same kinds of people, but we just don't we don't have the call volume, which is fine with me. So I can't say I expected that night either. But he was like, man, like, this is pretty insane. You got off of domestic, and you hate to see domestics obviously, but, or anything like that. But, you know, and then we had that high risk stop right away. And, so it was good though. I mean, he got his feet wet right away on training. Because again, that's another thing. You don't, on smaller departments, you can go over, you know, notional scenarios, hypotheticals, all that stuff. But you might not necessarily get to deal with it real world, while you're on training, just because we don't have the call volume. So some things you just got to kind of, you know, you just do your best to learn it on training. And, you know, then when you're on your own, if you haven't had one, then, you kind of got to figure it out, but you do it from a, you know, a training and knowledge based standpoint. And there's always other, you know, our county deputies around here are very good about helping out and vice versa and everything. So we got a good group of guys who work within the local municipalities and the county. We've got a great relationship with everybody. So it's a pretty tight knit community. Everybody's really willing to help everyone out and things like that.
Mm, okay, man. So lace up the sneakers, armchair quarterback. Let's pick your effort. Take us through the 2022 season. I do want to know what you did well. I also want to know what you did not do well. And we'll kind of go from there.
All right. So we got out, we left, Leo and I left on August 28th. So we got out there a few days before the season, which I think was super helpful because most guys weren't out there yet. And so we had a few days to just scout. We drove straight through, took a nap in a Walmart parking lot in the truck, got some groceries and everything, and then we went to our unit. And we found elk, like fresh elk sign that evening. And then we started, I think, I'm trying to remember if we actually saw elk that night or not, but ultimately we were kind of going off of Jeff's recommendations in this unit. And it was, this unit was, as far as like terrain, we were primarily hunting, sage, pinyon juniper. And, you know, we were hunting between, like, I would say 6,000 and 8,000 feet. Most of the time, I would say we were between 6,000 and 7,000 feet. The first 3 or 4 days, we were probably hunting a little bit higher, but what we had been doing, this valley, there's a river bottom, and those elk would come down onto the private ag fields, in the evenings, and they would feed all night. And then what we would do, there was, public behind it, up high. And so we would go down, we did this probably 3 or 4 mornings in a row where, we would drive down, we would locate them. We would find them like going up the slopes back into the timber, and then we would go back around and we would try to cut them off essentially. And that did not work very well. We came pretty close to some. I mean, we could smell them. We found, like, you know, poop that was still steaming. But the thing is like, it was so hot out there. I mean, it was getting up into the mid 90s during the day. And so those elk were bedding down really early, seemingly. But they would go into these really dog hair thick, you know, basins, up off of these ag fields, and they would just bed right away. And it was so difficult to get down to them because they were quite literally these hell holes. And because it was so early in the hunt, we didn't want to drop down in there and, you know, bust them out or whatever. So we were just kind of trying to hunt the fringe kind of above the basin and get down as far as we could in there without like messing anything up. We worked one bull there. We got him pretty close, never saw him, but he was probably within 100-150 yards. And eventually we just decided, you know, this isn't working. The elk are here. We know they're here, but if we keep doing this, we're either going to one have to go into their bedding area and, you know, risk and very likely probably bust them. Or we can just start, you know, picking a few other spots and going somewhere else. And we had picked, like, you know, we had scouted various areas within the unit, so we had an idea of where else we wanted to go. So we picked up camp after 3 or 4 nights, and we were just kind of camping by the truck. And we moved that first night that we moved, that was when we started night bugling. And I mean, right away, that was the coolest thing ever. I mean, like, we would just drive around, shut the truck off, and just start ripping bugles. And I mean, these elk were just lighting up all over the place. And I think they weren't quite as talkative right off the bat, right away in the season. But then I think, like, about the time we started moving, maybe it was just the area that we were in, but maybe they were a little more talkative there. But yeah, I mean, it was, we would shut off the truck, bugle a couple of times, you'd hear one or two, and then, you know, we'd just kind of like approximately, you know, mark them on X, and then we would drive down the road and we would do it again. And that worked exceptionally well. And so that first morning after we had moved and did the night bugling, we got on that morning, we went to that approximate location, heard a bugle almost right away. We got on that bull. I gotta back up a little bit. So I gotta thank my buddy Leo. He's cheap. He just decided to buy a cow tag. And I bought an either sex tag. So I mean, we're chasing bugles, and I was the shooter the entire time. So Leo, thank you, I guess. But I wish you would have gotten a bull tag. But that being said, I mean, it was great experience too, right? I mean, you know, like being the shooter, most of the time, because where the bulls are, the cows were. And but anyway, so we got up onto this long ridge up top, and this bull was probably, we got him within probably 100 yards. He started moving down slope. We followed him down a little bit. And then this thing came probably from 200 yards out. He came on a rope, like full bore, full tilt, and he just like threw on the brakes and just stopped, like ears pinned forward, just looking. And that was probably about 100 yards away. He dropped down a little bit, and we were chatting with him, and this is where I made a mistake. I thought that I was able to move, because I couldn't see him. I thought he had moved down into some brush, and I started moving. Leo was behind me, and then all of a sudden, like, he was gone. And so he busted me, and we chased him. I don't know if he like completely busted me, but he smelled something that was wrong. And then, so I was following him, and kind of working either him or a different one. I don't know what it was, but anyway, eventually that didn't work out. So we came back together, trying to figure out what to do next. And then we saw, probably we glassed, it was, I guess he had to have been a mile away, but there was this big herd bull with probably seven or eight cows, up on this meadow right below this timber stand. And he went into the timber stand, so we actually hiked back to the truck, got in the truck, and we went up this two track, and we parked kind of above this timber stand, got out of the truck, and I literally asked Leo, I'm like, you think I should rip a bugle here? And I'm like, yeah, I'm just gonna rip one, what the heck.
But of course you should.
As soon as I said that, this thing chuckles like probably a couple hundred yards away. Guess we don't have to do that. So we went in after this bull, and we, no kidding, Dan, we worked this bull for 3 hours, and it was insane. I mean, he was easily over 300 inches, but he must have had his cows behind him, and he was in between us and them, and he would just arc back and forth, like probably 70 to 80 yards away. And he just kept backing down the slope. He would come in, he would stop, he would arc. And he always had brush in between him mm-hmm. and us. And we just could not get close enough. The last time we saw him, we had good winds. He was coming up slope. I could hear him. I smelled him. And then he chuckled once, and I saw antlers move through the brush, and then he peeled back down towards his cows, and we probably worked him for another 15 minutes. And then he took off, like off that ridge. His cows must have crossed the valley and then up another ridge. And I had him at about 40 yards there momentarily, but I didn't have a shot. And so that was a crazy morning. I mean, that was so much fun. We just kept, I mean, I think I don't remember if we got into anything that night or not, but got into a burn scar the following day. We had another mature bull that we were working, he was really close as well in this burn scar. And he just wouldn't come any closer. We were like just below this crest, and he was on the other side of the crest. Well, I tried eventually working around him, only to find that there was a ravine that was probably 10 or 15 yards wide, and it was probably 20 feet deep. And so I was like, okay, well, I'm guessing that's why he wouldn't come any closer. There wasn't really a good way to actually, for that bull to actually get to us, and really for us to get to him to an extent. We could have crossed it, but we just kind of recognized it a little bit late, maybe. So there was that. And then we had another one we set up on just off of this road. We had seen some elk the night prior, down in this creek bottom. And so we're like, let's just try something different. So like there were these two fingers that were coming off the ridge that were kind of pointed towards the road, and there was a creek, and then a little sub drain that was coming up and then up onto the ridge essentially. And so eventually there was a cow and a decent bull. They came down off the slopes from across the road. And they started coming right towards this drain that we were sitting over. And we're like, dang, like this could be sweet. I mean, maybe Leo's going to get a shot, at a cow. Maybe I'm going to get a shot at a bull. Like this is going to work. I mean, he was talking to us. He was wallowing, scraping, and they got to this sub drain was probably like 100 yards wide. And then there was another finger, and they got to the point of that opposite finger. And then all of a sudden the cow wheeled around, she took off, and we had good winds, we thought. And then eventually the bull did the same thing, and they went back across the road. What the heck? Because the wind was in our face, like they were coming right up that drain. And I don't know. So we dropped down after close. Well, we got down to the tip of that finger, and that wind literally was coming towards that finger, and then it did like a 90-degree angle shift, and it just went right across to where those elk were. And
oh,
it was
dude,
just like
that
this
sucks,
old,
man.
Yeah, little micro terrain or something, and it just, I don't know. But yeah, it was I guess the last morning we were there was opening day of muzzleloader season. I think that was the 10th.
What's the date on that, bro?
It was September 10th was the opener.
Yeah, I've been misquoting that. It's a lot earlier than I realized.
Yeah. And I think this year maybe I think it's the 10th again, actually. I think
I think that it's right.
Yep.
Yep.
Yep. So we hunted that same burn scar where that nice bull had held up on us a few days prior, 3 or 4 days prior. And we got up there. We're like, well, this is our last morning to hunt. We weren't really thinking too much of it. We're like, we'll just go up here, try it. It's muzzleloader season, whatever. And, got up there, and there were just elk all over this thing. I mean, there were a couple bulls, there were cows all over. They ended up working up and over this two track, and then down into this timber stand where the fire had burned as well. And we got down in there, and I mean, we had two mature bulls. We didn't see them, but there were two mature bulls on either side of us. We ended up running into a couple spikes and a raghorn that were about 40 yards away probably. And they were just standing there staring at us. It's like, man, why can't one of these big guys do that, right? But we were so focused on these other two. Well, then all of a sudden there's a truck with some muzzleloader guys that came up that two track behind us. And we were we had hunted so hard at this point, and then all of a sudden those spikes and that raghorn, they bust. And I was not happy. I just kind of like, I got up just so they would see us. And I kind of did one of these. They kept going. I don't know if they saw us or not. I don't know if they saw the elk or heard the elk, but they just kept driving. So those bigger bulls, one for sure went down up onto another ridge. So we followed that bull. And then we had, again, two of them on both sides. Leo was probably 20 or 30 yards behind me calling. I was ahead of him, and this is like, it was a bunch of regen, like probably 5 to 15 feet tall. And
oh, gross. No.
Yeah. So our windows, my shot opportunities were not good at all. I had windows, from like 10 yards to 20 yards, whatever. And so I was about 30 yards ahead of Leo, and I've got bad hearing compared to Leo. So probably not a good thing at my age, but,
right.
He said you could hear this bull coming. I couldn't hear him yet.
Okay.
And, so I actually, like, I thought that bull had gone, like, he wasn't talking. He stopped talking. And so I'm like, gosh, like, he's gone. So I walked back to Leo, and Leo's like, what the heck are you doing? I'm like, dude, he's gone. He's like, no, I can still hear him coming through the brush. I'm like, well, I can't hear that, but I'll go back up there. So, so I go back. Eventually I can finally hear him. It's like, okay, now he's close enough where I can actually hear. And he kept coming. And I think this is where I messed up for sure. Like, so Leo was calling behind me, and I was actually calling as well. Yeah. Okay. So, that was my mistake. I should not have been doing that. And this bull got to, all I saw eventually was, again, this huge set of antlers and ear spin forward at about 40 yards, and I had zero shot. And I wouldn't have taken that frontal shot anyway, but, you know, he had to get with, you know, probably another 15 to 20 yards before I would have had a right. clear shot window. And I think what had happened, because I was calling, he was looking at me specifically, or where I should have been. Whereas if I would have just let Leo call, ideally, I think that bull probably would have just kept coming and walking towards me. And I was just standing there, like, in this opening, like, just as stiff as a board. And I'm like, you know, like, this thing's got to make a move or something so I can draw on it. And he stood there for, I don't know how long, probably a minute. And then eventually he knew something was up, and he went upslope. I chased him upslope. I bugled at him. He actually turned around, and he came back to about 40 yards. And then he really knew something was up, and that was it. That was the end of our hunt. That was the last morning. And we walked back to the truck. We didn't say a word to one another. We didn't say a word to one another until we got back to fuel up to town. Like, we were so defeated. We were probably angry at one. I know we were angry at one another. We talked about it eventually. But I definitely messed that one up for sure. But it was a very bittersweet hunt. It was, you know, we didn't kill an elk, but I mean, all told, we worked probably about a dozen bulls in 10 days or so. We were in elk every day. And, you know, like, yeah, did we kill an elk? No. However, I mean, we were in elk, we worked bulls. And I think that's more than probably 90% of hunters, and especially non-residents, can say. And, you know, so I see that as a huge success. I've got a huge chip on my shoulder for this year. And, you know, it was such a cool experience.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24/7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
I don't think I really expected to get into that many bulls and elk. And that was just so much fun. So, but long story, apologize. But yeah, that was the hunt.
Yeah, no, I wanted a long story. A couple things to think about. If you're a dude who hunted 10 days in Colorado and you didn't have 12 bulls that you interacted with and you weren't into elk every day, I don't think you can learn how to elk hunt very fast that way. And I feel like that's what ends up happening to guys that get stuck with tag soup for several years in a row, is that they're just not getting the encounters. So the fact that you guys worked your butts off, moved camps when you needed to, did the night bugling, worked as a team, and were into elk so much. I mean, I can't even tell you. You, like, learned so much so short. I wish everybody could. I mean, to me, that's, like, that's a damn good season. That's a very successful hunt for a Wisconsin dude. Like, huge. But let's talk about that vendetta, that chip on your shoulder for 2023. And I think you already said the one mistake was definitely, like, if you're the shooter, you're the shooter, not the caller as well. And I agree. Totally. And I've done that too, by the way. Like, all these mistakes. I've done them all. And I have friends that have made these mistakes. And it's cost them shots. Like, there's this one guy, he might even listen to this podcast, but his name's Mike. I'm not going to say his last name. And he's like, no, don't tell this story. And I'm going to. My father-in-law was calling for him. And my father-in-law is actually somebody I've tried to get on this podcast. He's a very low-key dude. But he's killed so many elk in Idaho with a bow that he can't even tell me how many elk he's killed. He doesn't even know. He was doing elk hunting before elk hunting was even, like, cool or known about. Like, he's just been, we're talking in the 70s, man. Like, he's like, all right, Mike, I'm tired of hearing you give all these sad stories. I'm going to call for you today. And Terry's called for me before, too. And it's a treat. Like, sit back and relax. The dude's going to work a bull, and you're going to get a shot, most likely. Well, he's got the six-point bull coming in on a rope, and he's got Mike 30 yards away from him at the hang-up spot, and he's got Mike's son, Colton, who's a good friend of mine, at the other. They're, like, doing the flying V. And this bull should have cows. He probably did have cows, but he was searching at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, and they didn't have to even, like, from the time they did a location bugle to the time where this bull came in to get a shot, they didn't even move much, just enough to, like, set up for shots. That's it. So this bull's doing all the work, and this bull's coming right towards Colton's shooting lane, and Mikey decides to just, he doesn't know why to this day, but he just thought it would be a good idea to help Terry out by adding a couple additional cow calls. And as soon as he let his first cow call out, bull stops and stares right where that sound came from. Doesn't see what he should have seen, gets suspicious, and once he's sus, he's out. And all Colton needed was literally, like, two more steps and he'd be in his lane. It was a rough night back at camp, I'll tell you that much, man. And so, yeah, I tell that story not to sell out Mike. I love Mikey, but we've all done it, man. So you got to shut your mouth. If you're my shooter and I'm calling for you, the only sound I ever want to hear is you maybe cow calling to stop a bull in your lane just so he comes to a complete stop. But I'm expecting to hear thwack after that. You know what I mean? And then you can cow call all you want after you shoot. Now you know. The other thing I'm wondering, and Will, I'm just going to shoot you straight, is, like, I'm putting myself in that scenario that you guys are in, and I'm wondering, if I'm at the truck and I hear a bull chuckle, and you say he's north of 300, and he's got cows, I'm wondering if I would have ever made any sound, and I'm thinking I probably wouldn't. I don't care how thick it is. It can't be thicker than North Idaho. I've killed bulls without calling in Idaho. I'm wondering if I would have ever made a sound. Did you ever think to just shut your mouth and let him do all the talking, since he already is and he's already got cows and he's probably not going to leave his cows to come see your terrible synthetic cow calls? He's going to just arc, display, show off how big he is, just in case that maybe you are a real cow and you'll come to him. He ain't coming to you. Have you ever thought about just putting your calls away and sneaking in?
Quite honestly, Dan, that did not cross our mind. I think we were so, like, fired up about it. Like, oh yeah, we're going to call this bull. And, like, you know, I don't think that really crossed our mind when we were, you know, after that bull. But you bring that up and that makes sense to me. So, yeah, that's worth keeping in mind for next time if I find myself in a situation like that this year. Just kind of creeping in like that. But yeah, that makes total sense. Because, I mean, I guess.
Whereas, what if he had a satellite bull as well? And that satellite bull is a legal bull in Colorado. He's got at least four on one side, or whatever the rule is. And that satellite bull is between you guys and the herd bull. We're calling. I mean, if we're meat hunting, we're calling and we're going to call him in. But the upper echelon age class public land bulls, God, you got to get lucky to catch them on the right day, or you got to have them very much cornered. And by cornered, I mean the topography to where he's been pushed and pushed, and he's finally going to turn around and defend his harem. And I've had bulls do that. And I've also had bulls, like, I've pushed him for miles. And I mean, they answer every call I make, and I'm pushing and I'm sweating and I can hardly keep up. And we finally get to, like, maybe we're losing timber. They're going to have to go into the bright sunlight. It's 1 o'clock. They haven't bedded. And he's like, this bench will work. I'm done. These cows don't want to move anymore. Tongues are hanging out. All right. I'm going to kill you. And that has worked. But man, it's tough. So I'm just not convinced elk calling is always now, this is just my opinion. There's a lot of guys out there who call elk in, myself included. I've done it, but I'm just talking about, like, going off of, like, the vibe I've had. Because I'm a public land elk hunter too, man. I don't know why. I need to start hunting private ranches more. But I'm just telling you, the public land hustle, these elk are not, they're just kind of, I hate to use the word educated. I just want to say they're experienced. That would be the word I would be okay calling it, you know? So talk to me through the lens of, how do you know when to take the calls and put them away and go into stealth mode or bubble hunt? Like, keep sneaking in on him, especially if he's already, like, letting his location be known and the herd's still moving and it's still good thermals. You have good wind. How would you do that? Dissect a bubble play where you don't call, but you hang out with elk as close as possible, as long as possible, and good shit happens.
Yeah. Well, I guess that's, you know, I don't know what the correct answer would be, because I guess that I haven't personally really done that. However, I guess kind of just going off of what you were saying, I mean, if you're sneaking in, I would expect, like, you might be, you know, just working this bull, because they were bedded in there. I mean, that was their intent. Their intent was to bed down in this timber stand for the day. And it was definitely, yeah, it was easy shooting in there. It would have been easy shooting in there for the most part. But yeah, I would suspect, like, if you're doing something like that and working one of those herd bulls like that, just, you know, if it takes you a few hours just to creep in on one and not make a noise, just so you can get close, that, I mean, am I kind of on the right track there?
Matthews Incorporated out of Sparta, Wisconsin. My go-to is a Phase 4 29. That's what I'll be using for the 2023 fall elk season, just around the corner. If you're a little bit longer draw, check out the 33. Vortex Optics. Get your optics online and save some loot. EuroOptic.com. Discount code ELK10 takes 10% off. OnX Hunt. Elite membership. All 50 states. Do your e-scouting. Get your 3D. Add your waypoints. Run your tracking. Drop a pin when you drop your bull. Discount code ELKSHAPE takes 20% off. Kufaru International, running the tactical or the duplex light frame with the hoodlum or bedlam. If you see me at a total archery challenge, I'll probably run in the Kufaru hip quiver. Made in the USA, and I stand behind as the best frame on the market. MagView gear, made in America, lifetime warranty, no phone case, access to all three cameras on your iPhone or Android. Discount code ELKSHAPE 10% off. They also make attachments for binoculars so that you can do digiscoping proper. Wilderness Athlete, new discount code. We have several elk-shaped stacks. Click the link in the show notes. Discount code elk-shaped 2023. Crispy Boots, probably the new fancy boot of the year, is the Brickstall Mountain GTX. I got a lot of miles with that. It's going to be my starter for the all-around mountain. Very light. Flex rating of a 3 or 4 somewhere in there. Super dependable. All synthetic. Very breathable. If you're not sure, you can always drop down to Laponia 2s. I stand behind them. Buck Knives, the Alpha Scout, the Alpha Hunter, the pack light options, all those are in my kill kit. Check it out. Buck since 1902. Stealth cam, cellular and non-cellular, 20% off. Use the discount code ELKSHAPE20. Run that camera on 4K. 10% off discount code is ELKSHAPE10. You can get multiple cams or just run one. You can choose several plans and be on your way getting transmissions. The new Deceptor has that on-demand mode, so you can hit a button and get a photo from your camera right on demand. It's pretty sick. Check it out. Marsupial, I'm running the Bino Harness 10x42. got the rangefinder pouch and pocket made out of Arizona. Jim's a good buddy of mine. I think it's the best bino harness on the market. New to you guys, but not new to me, Born Primitive. They've been making workout gear in the CrossFit scene and fitness space for a long time. They have a military background. They also hired Aaron Snyder to consult to make their outdoor line, and I've been running it well for the last 6 months behind the scenes. I had all the samples. I'm committed. I'm going for it. So I am running Born Primitive. Click the link in the show notes to see what lineups I run, not only on the workout side of things, but also in the field. It's pretty exciting for me to see a big fitness company get into the hunting space, and I want to support them. Back with e-bikes, discount code Elkshape takes $300 off. And of course, if you are buying gear, discount code Elkshape, 10% off at blackovis.com. Back to the podcast. Let's put the Dirk Durham glasses on. And in that similar situation, I know for a fact that if Dirk's at his truck and he hears a chuckle, and it's pretty clear to everybody that, man, this is where they intend to bed for the day, Dirk would definitely let them bed for the day. And even if that meant hanging out in the wings for the bull to do an uninitiated midday bugle so that you could like kind of drop your final waypoint in your mind as to which stand a tall, mature timber has the most abundant shade, and that's where they're chilling. And then Dirk would go move in slowly with the wind in his favor when it's most predictable midday. Let's just say 11 a.m. or 12. And then I think at that point you can wear, let's just call these three hats. You could wear the Dan Staten hat, which is, I'm going to probably tiptoe in as close as I can. And if I get a good vibe, I'm going to push the envelope. Meaning I'm going to like take a step glass until I see this bull or I see a cow. And once I see that cow or sentinel, I'm going to be like, okay, I can't get in any tighter. I got good wind. I'm going to sit down. I'm going to have an arrow knocked. I'm going to have my release on my string, and I'm just going to wait to see if he gets up to check cows or to go rake a tree. I'm just going to hang out with the elk as close as possible. I am going to run the risk of the wind switching maybe randomly at one point and blowing them out, but I'm in tight, and I know that if I'm hanging out with elk and I'm close on public land, good stuff happens. I'm going to wear my elk nut hat, where we're going to do everything I just said except for we're not going to sneak. We're going to draw the line where we're 70 yards from this bull, and I'm going to go on his app, and I'm going to look up his slow play, and I'm literally going to read it word by word and do it exactly. And if you guys have never heard our podcast with Elk Nut, I think he's been on at least once. He breaks that down for you guys, and I think everyone should know the slow play. Maybe you do the slow play. Maybe you put your Dirk Durham hat on, and you're like, I'm going to pick a fight with this MF-er. And he's kind of, the cows have been bedded now for a couple hours. They're very comfortable. They do not want to leave. And this bull, I'm going to literally let out a couple cow calls. He's going to bugle, and then I'm going to bugle. And when I bugle, he's going to be like, get up. And then he's probably going to bugle. And then we're going to escalate the emotion. I'm going to match or mimic what he does. And eventually I'm going to cut off his bugle, and he's going to come in raging mad. And I'm going to shoot him because my caller is 30 yards behind me or whatever. And I identified a hang up spot. Let's say you're going to wear the Joel Turner hat, and you're going to run the pedo elk program where you're just going to make calf call sounds, and you're going to do just bull calling cow sounds. No, and you guys need to know the differences between those. If you don't, there's plenty of Dan Staten podcasts to listen to and other resources. I might do the Joel Turner hat and just do that program. But all these guys have one thing in common. They want the herd to be settled. We want a couple hours to go by so that the cows are comfortable. And we want the elk to do elk things. We don't want to go in too early when they're not completely settled and they can pull the stakes like they did. So that's kind of like one thought is like that we're armchair quarterbacking, but dude, that was the golden opportunity you had to kill a giant.
Yeah. Yeah.
And what you guys did was you guys were like, oh, I've watched Primo's videos. We just got to get close and a cow call bugle and he'll come running in. Well, you're not at the Hill Ranch in Colorado, Will. You're not at the Deseret. You're not on a ranch. You're on the public land ranch. And these guys, they've been messed with. They have experience. And I know that there's a lot of good elk hunters that listen to this podcast. And I'm sure they have even other ideas that you could run. But those were like my top ideas for you there. Any questions on those setups?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I'm going to look into those, of course, a little bit more and listen to podcasts and things of that nature, obviously. So, but yeah, that makes absolutely total sense to me, and, you know, live and learn. And it was fun anyway, regardless. I mean, the fact that we got to work them for a few hours, but
3 hours is, and isn't it crazy how, like, I bet those 3 hours flew by and you were like,
yeah, yeah. It felt like an hour probably. Yeah. I mean, before you know it, you look down at your watch and it's like, holy crap, it's like afternoon already. So that was cool, but he was big. I mean, that one, and then that one on the last day were just, I can't get either of those two out of my mind.
What was the water? What was the water situation where those elk were? What was the terrain like? What are the odds of that bull wanting to get a sip of water when his cows are on lockdown? He knows where they're at. They're in a safe place. There's no satellites in a finger nearby. He has an opportunity to get some water in his belly without losing his herd. Was there any water nearby?
Not really. No. I mean, there was enough water in that area where, I mean, you know, there were some like cattle tanks and everything, and there were small creeks and things, but like it was pretty dry. Said it was up in the mid 90s most afternoons. And we found that those elk were, again, probably, we hunted them probably around 6,000, 6,500. It was just kind of interesting, I guess, because when all the muzzy guys started showing up, everybody started going way high, which I guess maybe you might expect that. But like where we were, there really wasn't any water up high. So, I mean, there was cover, but I think they were down a little bit lower because they just had better access to water. And then of course, I mean, they had plenty of area to bed down and stuff too, and then their food and everything. So yeah, like we kind of had the area for the most part all to ourselves, which was great. So yeah, there really, where he was, he would have had to, there was no water in that stand, that I can tell you, where they were bedded. So, that they were just bedding early and, you know, getting up late, I think, just because of the weather, the hot weather.
That makes sense that they're near water. Let's talk about that public land encounter with the other public land hunters, because that is something that doesn't get talked about enough on podcasts. And I'm certainly willing to talk about it because I have my fair share of run-ins. I'd say that overall, they're mostly positive. When the guys came up the two-track road in the vehicle and you were already in the elk, what was the timestamp-ish?
I would say probably around 8:30 in the morning. Probably something like that, maybe a little early.
That's pretty rough. That's pretty late. That's pretty tough for people to be driving in. Now, did they drive by your four-wheeler or vehicle to get there?
Because the way, and it was, that road was actually not a public access point. I can't remember how it worked, but like there are some like areas that you can't drive through because it's private. Like there's private easements or stuff through this public property or whatever. So you can't drive vehicles, you know, through. So I don't know if they just like completely disregarded that or if they had permission to use that road. I don't know. But yeah, it was around probably 8 a.m. and they were just slow rolling up this two track and they never stopped. But again, so I don't know if they, that's why I got up and I wanted them to see us. But I don't know if they ever did because they just kept going, which thankfully they did. But yeah, but that was frustrating. And I mean, that's unfortunately kind of public land hunting. And I get that even around here, duck hunting and stuff, you know, like you're going to run into people on public land and you just kind of got to deal with it, unfortunately. So, but you know, that's why we have public land. I mean, you know, we use it and it's there. So people can't use it, but it doesn't take away from the frustration once in a while.
No, it certainly doesn't. I guarantee most instances, they're not intentionally trying to F up your hunt. But also it is weird that it is a private easement. If I was betting, man, I would bet they didn't have access, honestly, and just didn't do their due diligence. I mean, you're in law enforcement, you understand humans are dumb, and elk does dumb things to humans. I've seen it. Running into other hunters is tough, right? Like you don't really want to, and it's always kind of awkward because they're probably lying to you and you're probably lying to them. And it's almost like a worthless amount of time spent for both parties. So I've adopted the philosophy of like, I try to avoid having any powwows on the mountains unless like absolutely necessary. And I generally approach with a yielding type mentality of like, just tell me what you wanted to do or what your intentions are, and I will make sure that I don't get in the way of those so we don't run into each other again. And that's been a good approach, honestly. It's not always easy to do. But all in all, I think we all can agree that we have similar goals. We've made similar sacrifices to be where we are. And we all have a finite number of hours or days left to do this pursuit. And then we got to wait another 11 months. So let's play nice together in the sandbox. And, you know, easier said than done, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yep. And yeah, I would say, I mean, there's only been one occasion where I've gotten pretty bent out of shape, and there was probably some justification to it. That was duck hunting specifically. I won't get into it, but overall, like, you know, I mean, I try to be extremely respectful of other guys, but it's frustrating. It really can be frustrating. And most of that time, most of the times where, you know, guys get bent out of shape for me is duck hunting. And that's, I mean, because everybody wants to be in one specific spot and they crowd you. And so I know how it goes. And you know, fortunately, we didn't really run into that out there at all. I mean, that was the closest encounter we really had with anybody. And that wasn't even, it turned out to not be a big deal, obviously. Fortunately, they just kept going. But yeah, and we kept working elk after that. So the elk didn't get blown out because that truck was slow rolling up there. So fortunately.
So statistically speaking, like going into 23, are you guys planning on hunting from the truck? Do you have any intentions of doing a spike camp or bivy hunting? What was your average daily output, steps or miles, things like that? So people could get an understanding of like what it kind of takes to grind 10 days like you guys did.
Yeah. So we truck camped the entire time. And like initially, and that thought process kind of changed once I spoke with you last year, because we were initially going to, you know, hike in and, you know, set up a spike camp and go back 3 or 4 or 5 or 7 miles, whatever, and hunt that way. But we did it, you know, kind of the way that you suggested, where, you know, you stay mobile. That way you're not burning time packing out and getting your truck and then going somewhere else and hiking back in. Yeah, it seemed like it worked pretty well, where we were just mobile with the truck. Because it was so hot, we would generally hunt for several hours in the morning. And then we would, you know, just kind of lay low a little bit, and then we would go back out for the evening. Our thought process on that was, you know, if we do kill an elk in 95 degree weather, I mean, are we gonna have enough time to get it out before, you know, it spoils or, you know, just isn't as great or whatever. So, but we probably put on, I don't know, probably 3 to 6 miles a day would be a good bet, I would say. But we didn't have to go that far from the truck to find elk. So that probably could have changed into longer, you know, days or more steps taken, you know, if we did actually have to, you know, go out of our way to locate elk. But fortunately, we found them, and they were always relatively close to the truck. So,
well, here's where I want to end, Will. I got to take advantage of a Wisconsin dude on the mic. So for those that are like either interested, maybe going on their first hunt out west, or they haven't done it in a while, or even us out west guys who take it for granted that we live out west, like I want a behind the scenes look of what it's like to be a Wisconsin dude driving to Colorado. So I'm just going to ask you a bunch of questions, try to give me short answers, and let's just see how many I can get through. How much windshield time from when you left your driveway to where you pulled up and parked the truck for where you hunted mostly?
I think it was probably about 20 to 22 hours, somewhere in there.
Okay, so did you guys budget that drive time on the front end and back end of your days off?
Yes, we did.
How many actual hunting days did you get in yourself?
10.
So you had 2 days of travel.
Yeah. So we left the 28th, got there the 29th, and then we left the morning of the 10th after we got done hunting, got back the 11th. So we technically we had more time, but we scouted for a few days because obviously the season wasn't open. And then we hunted the first 10 days.
This is probably the most important question I'm going to ask you. I think, what dates are you hunting this year?
September 13th to the 30th.
So you did make an adjustment.
Yeah. And part of that is, my plan was to hunt the latter half of September anyway, but it kind of just worked out that way. Cause I got a wedding early September anyway that I'm going to. So I'm going to leave. I work. My last shift is the 12th. I'm taking off 2 full rotations. And so I'm just going to leave right away. Cause it's like, what the heck? I mean, I'm not going to sit around for a couple of days and, I'm just going to go out there and hunt from the 14th to the 30th and, drive back after that and then probably go duck hunting the next day. So
did anything break on your bow, on your equipment, in your truck? What did you guys have to fix?
So we did have an issue with the truck. Fortunately, I can't even remember what it was. It wasn't anything crazy, but we did take it into town and get it checked out. So that took up an afternoon. I think we were able to hunt for a few hours at night. But nothing on the bow broke. Fortunately, this year I actually just ordered a backup bow, off of eBay. Cause if my buddy Leo can't go this year and I am the only one who has a bow, there's no way that I am gonna risk busting my bow. All of a sudden I gotta go back to town, either buy a new one or get this one fixed, get it tuned. Ain't doing that. So I bought a Bowtech Assassin for just over $200 off of eBay. I've got an extra sight because I switched out my sight last year. I went to the Black Hole Descent Verdict. I'm going to get a new rest for my primary. And then I'm going to slap my old drop away on the Bowtech. I'm going to get that restrung. I got a buddy who does all his own tuning and everything. So that bow is going to cost me about $300 all told. And now I just have an extra one in case I need it. So
love it. Good job. Give me a percentage and be honest. All the e-scouting you did, probably on Onyx desktop as well as Google Earth or whatever platforms, compared to when you actually got there and looked at it with your real eyeballs, was it 100% match of what you expected it? Or based on, I'm just trying to get at like e-scouting versus real life, what percentage is like exact versus like, just so people know, and this is from a Midwest perspective.
Yeah, I would say that e-scouting, like coming from the Midwest, and I'll say this, like I've got a pretty good understanding of what topography looks like on a map compared to the mountains or whatever. I mean, I worked out.
You were a firefighter, right?
Yeah, I was on a hotshot crew. So like, okay. I understand like, you know, like when you're looking at a topographical map, whether it's online or, you know, a physical copy of one, and you look at contour lines and stuff, it does not, you might look at that and be like, oh, that's not too bad. But then you actually get out to that spot and you're like, holy crap, that is not what it looks like on the map or what I thought that it was supposed to look like on the map. So I don't know if I could really give you a percentage, but I would say like, you know, what we were looking at, we expected it to look probably pretty similar to what we were looking online. Just knowing the experience or like the experience that Leo and I had out there in the mountains prior to that. But if you aren't familiar with the mountains, and you're just looking at a map, I mean, and that's the thing, like you gotta, I think, you know, being in physical shape, and we talked about that a little bit last year. I mean, I think that's very important when it comes to, you know, actually getting after it out there, because if you're not in shape and you got to chase elk and go up all these slopes and everything, I mean, it sucks anyway. It's not fun to, you know, have a big pack on your back and hike up a steep slope and you're, you know, just huffing and puffing the whole time and your legs are burning, but it's a lot easier and a lot less miserable when you're in shape for it. So I would say, yeah, scouting, we did a lot of e-scouting and stuff, but you know, just, I would say from Midwestern perspective, just understand that like what you see on the map, you might be surprised at what you find, in that unit or in that area when you actually go out there, it might look completely different to you. That's my two cents or my opinion on it. So,
okay. What was one piece of gear that stood out to you that was like, I'm really glad I had this?
I would say, I don't know. I really don't know. A good bow. Good bow. I don't know. But yeah, I would have to think about that one. But because again, we just hunted from our truck and everything for the most part. So it wasn't like, you know, something broke or whatever. Nothing really broke otherwise, except for the truck had that problem. But yeah, I don't know. I couldn't tell you like one good piece of gear, but always have your release with you. There you go. Make sure you don't forget that and have two of them.
Yeah, two is one for sure. Well, dude, it was good to catch up with you, man. Like, I really am impressed with what kind of, I don't know. I just, like I said, I really think you had a very successful season that was very fruitful for the long run. You're a young guy, you're a hardworking, you know, Leo, and you get very limited time off, and it's a long ways from Wisconsin. So I feel like I would say the elk are in trouble this year now that you're going back to the same spot and you got an additional time and you have less baggage. And it's like, oh my gosh. So it's just kind of a matter of, well, getting some little bit of luck, little lady luck, never hurt. Hopefully the muzzy guys don't run you out of there, and should arrow your bow. And I think you're just going to study up on your tactics a little bit and open up that playbook a little bit. Work really hard to understand what the elk are doing and why are they doing, like the timestamp of the day and what they're generally going to want to do based on the scenario that you find yourself in. It's a guessing game, but as you get more maturation in the game, you'll start to make better decisions. And once you can start predicting what the elk do before they do it, well, that's when tags get punched, unless you're just shithouse lucky, which it happens to all of us too. I'd love to be lucky every year, but that's awesome, man. Okay. So are you on Instagram? What's your Instagram?
Yeah, this is Will_Gorr, G-O-R-R. So you can find me there. But again, like I said last year, I don't really post a whole lot, but if you want to give me a follow, that's fine.
No, it's cool. Somebody might want to reach out. There's other cops that listen or whatever, or maybe other Wisconsin dudes, and maybe someone lives near you where they want to grab workouts and shoot bows and iron sharpens iron. Guys, this community is awesome. And it's, I just feel so blessed to be able to kind of be the guy who does the podcast thing. All that means is I just get to carve out time and hang out with people. Will, it was so good to talk to you once again. And you know, the invitation to come back on is there for next year with some successful stories and help educate us all on the learning curve, because we all want to get better.
Yeah, sounds good, Dan. Thanks for your time. Appreciate it. And good luck this season.
Absolutely.
Likewise, guys, separation's in the preparation. We'll catch you on the next one. Hope you guys enjoyed catching up with Will. I know I certainly did. And it sounds like he's got a great hunt plan for 2023. And I appreciate what he does for work and that he's blue collar. And he does blue collar style elk hunting that we all can relate to. And wish him best of luck. Guys, you have a lot of options out there when it comes to podcasts. Thanks for choosing ours. If you would, recommend this pod to a friend or do a review or share it on your Instagram story. It always helps and we really appreciate it. We can't do it without you. Separation is in the preparation. Catch you on the next one.